if we could boil this game down to one play and win this game, before the game started, if you asked me, hey, I'm going to give you one play, and if you're successful on that one play, you beat Alabama, I would have taken that 100 times out of 100.
Hello and welcome to Always College Football. That's right, Coach Kelly. You did an amazing job. You took it into your own hands. I'm going to tell you why that was a genius call, and that's not even with the benefit of hindsight. I'll give you actual examples as to why that was the correct call to go for it. Had it even missed, it was still the correct call. Great job executing, though, and great job pulling off the upset. I'm Greg McElroy. Along with me, as always, is Mark Kubiak, fresh off of a bender in South Bend, Indiana. So hopefully he'll be able to function today, even though his level of function at 100% is below that of the normal human being. His level of function after a field storming in Notre Dame is even lower than what one would anticipate. But hey, that's what we do it for. So much fun yesterday. What an incredible day of college football. Surprising outcomes, shakeups, especially in the top six. Things that we haven't seen in quite a while, like teams punching their ticket to bowl eligibility. Don't tell me bowl games don't matter. I'm looking at you, Kansas Jayhawks. I'm looking at you, Florida State Seminoles. Bowl games still matter and are still absolutely to be celebrated. So we'll talk about some of those instances. But you got to think, you kind of know where we're going to start the show. So why are we wasting any time? Let's get into the breakdowns. Let's talk about it. All right, let's kick it off down in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, where a massive upset took place. All right, we told you all throughout the offseason, not that like we're the, you know, authority when it comes to evaluating coaches and fit, but I was so fed up with the way that Brian Kelly's offseason was covered. And, oh, you know, family and everyone making a huge deal out of that. I still listen to national radio shows that make a fool of themselves by saying family all the time. Dude, this guy can coach. He's going to win a national championship at LSU. Now, it's unlikely that it comes in 2022, but it's going to happen. If you look at how he has kind of figured his own team out, it tells you all you need to know. What an incredible performance from LSU to pull off the massive upset there under the lights in Death Valley. What a scene. What a spectacle. It was tremendous. Let's start with the two-point conversion, okay? Because that's what most people are talking about. Oh my goodness, what stones? What gumption? Yeah, it was the right call. Why? Because the longer you play this thing out, the more snaps that occur in the ball game, the more likely Alabama's talent advantage, which exists, it's not as significant as it probably should be, but there is a talent advantage there that exists. The longer it goes, the more likely you're playing into Alabama's hands. Look at last year in the Iron Bowl. Alabama goes to overtime. Auburn scores a touchdown on their opening possession, decides to kick the extra point, whereas they should have just gone for two because the first time it got to the two-point conversion areas, they had an incredible two-point conversion play called where they just threw an easy pass that would have won them the game. I think if you can win it with your offense on the field and you can keep a Heisman Trophy winner on the sideline, that's always going to be the correct call. Even had it fallen incomplete, I think it would have been the right call regardless. I really do. Even with the benefit of hindsight, if the ball falls incomplete and they don't win the game, they ultimately lose in heartbreaking fashion, it's still the right call in the game. Let's talk a little bit about LSU before we get into the rest of it. What an incredible game, I might add. LSU weathering the storm, constantly being able to answer back. Do you realize that Alabama did not have a single offensive snap in this game in which they had the lead? Which means every time Alabama would go down and score and take the lead, LSU would answer. This game had a remarkable 8 lead changes in the second half and overtime alone. Just ridiculous how back and forth it was. Just as soon as Jaden Daniels would make a play, then Bryce Young would make a play, and then Jameer Gibbs would make a play, and then you know Mason Taylor would make a play. It was just a phenomenal football game, and what an environment there on the Bayou. Other things of significance, I think when we've had LSU 4 times now, we've seen them a lot, okay? We've seen LSU an awful lot. We saw them in week 1, against Florida State. We saw him against Florida. So we've seen them over a seven-week period. We saw him four times. We got to see incremental growth over the course of those four outings. And you saw what was a little bit of a feeling out process there in the early going. Now, they found ways to win. They beat Mississippi State, had some good wins, but really what was a feeling out process, Brian Kelly finally in the last couple weeks has really nailed down his own personnel, nailed down how they're going to be able to win games, and what a result it's been. Starting with the Florida game, and then following it up after the Florida game with a really nice comeback performance against Ole Miss, and then taking some time in the bye week, self-assess, and being even better after the bye week. Just a tremendous job of creating trust between players and coaching staff and the player-coach relationship and the dynamic there as well. Jaden Daniels has become the player that we always thought he had a chance to become. Remember, this guy was a blue-chip recruit coming out of high school. He always had great measurables. He always had great skill and great traits, but now he's put it all together. He's also now has poise. He has the ability to maintain composure, even as the game feels as though it might be slipping away. That throw he made to Mason Taylor to give them the lead there, 24-21 with just a minute and a half remaining, that's an insane throw. I mean, tight coverage, man coverage, you know, inside leverage there on the corner route with the number three. He puts it, gets it up and down because the corner drifted back. If he leads him to the back left pylon, it might be intercepted. He had to kind of hold him up a bit. Mason Taylor got big and made the play. And then, of course, he found Mason Taylor on the little rub route there for the two-point conversion. All right, Jaden Daniels is phenomenal. Let's go next to the two-point conversion play itself. This is a great job identifying tendencies by Brian Kelly. They ran this exact same play when they beat Florida State. I say that with air quotations because they did beat them, but they called offensive pass interference in the process. But it was essentially a little bit of a rub, a little bit of a pick. It's a play called sprint right option, which is an old West Coast offense play. You sprint the quarterback to the right. You have the inside receiver who's going and getting a little bit of a rub off the slot receiver. And in some cases, if you're in a 3-by-1, you get a double rub and he's out in the flat and a defender has to run through a lot of traffic to try to cover it up. They ran it to perfection. However, OPI was called against Florida State a long time ago. The exact same play, same formation, same everything. You know who also ran this play? It was the Clemson Tigers in 2016 to win the national championship when Deshaun Watson found Hunter Renfro. Not the same formation. This was a 2-by-2 look, and Renfro was able to get up and get out and catch the game winner. But they have seen this play on tape give Alabama fits for years and years and years. It did again on the most critical snap of the season for the Crimson Tide. Just a great job. Let's talk quickly about Alabama before we move on. Couple things. All right. One, this team lacks an identity offensively. They really do. They kind of run the ball, but not really run the ball. It feels like they're like, all right, Bryce, go make a play. And that's kind of where they're at. The receivers are still completely subpar. They have talent, but the separation leaves something to be desired, or lack thereof is separation, leaves something to be desired. And then I think Bryce Young, for the first time in his career, he looked very human when he was under duress. He was 4 of 21 when being pressured on Saturday, 3.7 yards per attempt, and he had a touchdown plus an interception. Of course, that interception on the opening drive, really bad decision by Bryce. He was great, but just not great enough to be able to get it done on the road in a hostile environment. Tremendous, tremendous job for LSU. We'll talk about what it means for them, and we'll talk about what it means for Alabama as far as the playoffs are concerned here in the next, whether we do it in this show or we do it in tomorrow's show, we're going to hit it, just might not have time for it today. All right, moving on to another game in the Southeastern Conference, the University of Georgia, reminding everybody who daddy is. All right, these guys took it to the Tennessee Volunteers, and I think there was one stat that best illustrated how decisive this game was. Georgia was 7-12 on third down, Tennessee was 2-14. That's all you need to know. Tennessee 2-14. Remember, Tennessee's great when they can extend drives, right? That's their MO. You pick up a third down, fresh set of downs, let's get into the tempo stuff, and next thing you know, your defense is on their heels the rest of the drive. Georgia did a phenomenal job, especially with their defense getting off the field against what was the nation's best offense. Granted, elements and weather and rain and all this other stuff were a factor, especially in the second half of that football game. But Tennessee was clearly outmatched, and they had no answer for some of the pressure packages that Georgia was bringing at them. Without Nolan Smith, who is kind of that edge presence that Georgia's been able to rely on the last several years, they decided to ramp up the pressure. And my goodness, did they ever ramp it up? I don't recall a time in which I saw Georgia blitz that much or as often as they did in this particular game. They blitzed Hendon Hooker on 29 of 47 dropbacks. That's 62%. Now, Georgia's not usually a team that brings a lot of pressures. They do simulated pressures where they looks like blitz, but it's not blitz. But in this particular case, they were heating them up pretty good. 62% of Hendon Hooker's dropbacks were blitzed upon. That's the highest blitz rate for the Georgia Bulldogs since ESPN began tracking blitzes in 2011. So that is the most aggressive the defense has been under Kirby Smart and under his predecessor in nearly 11 years. Pretty amazing when you look at that. It might be more than that. That's just when ESPN started tracking the stats. So there's no telling how long that has been since Georgia blitzed on nearly two-thirds of the opponent's dropbacks. They also, of course, did an amazing job. In the first eight games of the season, I might add, Georgia blitzed on only 23% of the opponent's dropbacks. So talk about a tendency breaker. And Josh Heupel and company really had no answer for it. If you look at Hendon Hooker, he was sacked how many times? Five, six times? Felt like it was nonstop. The pressure was in his face. He had the strip sack in the end zone. So it was really impressive. Six sacks officially with the strip sack in there as well. I think the big thing too, the red zone defense for Georgia really clamping down. When they got inside the 20s, obviously that threat of the deep ball went away. And that was a big reason why I don't think Tennessee could really manufacture many points whatsoever. Hendon Hooker did not have his best stuff, but he was constantly under pressure. He was getting hit. He was getting flustered and really had a difficult time pushing the ball down the field. Coming into the game on Saturday, Hendon Hooker had completed 52% of the passes that traveled 10 or more yards. 52% on passes that traveled 10 or more yards. So we're talking deep balls, curl routes, difficult throws in some cases. 52% was his completion rate coming in. That it goes along with 16 yards per attempt and 15-1 touchdown and interception ratio. Well, on throws that traveled more than 10 yards downfield against Georgia, Hendon Hooker just 2 of 8. 2 of 8, so 25%, cutting that usual completion percentage in half. 4.9 yards per attempt, that's basically a third of what it usually is, and just one interception with zero touchdowns. So Hendon Hooker, only 2 of 8 on those downfield throws, not ideal, but also there wasn't great separation with the receivers as well. Georgia did an amazing job tackling. Also, so impressed with what I saw from their defense, but offensively, they deserve a little credit as well. Now, Tennessee's defense, they at least gave them a chance. They gave them a chance, but man, tough start from them. They did get the fumble that led to 3 points on the opening drive, but really after that point until halftime, it was all Georgia. Stetson Bennett had a tremendous day, 17 of 25, 257, and a couple touchdowns. Had completions of 52, 37, and 49 yards in the first quarter alone. So clearly they came out, they wanted to work some play action, they wanted to hit some downfields, they wanted to do some double moves, and it worked beautifully. Tremendous credit to Stetson Bennett. I thought he played a great football game because he'd been a little bit up and down the weeks previous. I thought he played his best game of the season, even though there were a few there early, especially against Oregon, that would certainly be in the conversation as well. Just a tremendous performance from Georgia. Can't say I'm all that surprised. I just feel like Georgia's the more physical team, and I had yet to see Tennessee get punched in the mouth. They didn't respond very well. Also, this was probably the most difficult spot that Tennessee had been in. They'd have several pre-snap procedure penalties. They just didn't get into much of a rhythm offensively. So I think they have a lot of soul searching to do after this game, because if they played Georgia again, I don't think the result would be any different. They need to learn how to weather the storm offensively and make sure that they can still create the big plays, even in spite of the pressures and blitzes and the different things that they saw from the Georgia defense. So tremendous credit to Kirby Smart, tremendous credit to his staff, and tremendous credit to those players. That was a clinic against what was a very powerful, very explosive Tennessee football team. All right, moving on to what was maybe the most interesting result of the night, even though I think obviously the aforementioned Georgia and LSU victories kind of captivated the world's attention. But y'all, Notre Dame did the college football world a favor. This is not me being an anti-Clemson guy. This is me acknowledging that Clemson, even if they went undefeated, had massive flaws. We said that they're a little bit like 2015 Iowa, where had Iowa won the Big Ten, they were sitting there at 13-0 and they would have gotten into the college football playoff. But Iowa, even at 13-0, had noticeable issues, especially on the offense. So I think the college football world got dealt a favor because Clemson, if they got into the playoff, if they secured a playoff spot, I'm not sure it would have ended very well for them. I think even the most diehard Clemson fan looked at their team and said, man, we got flaws. Well, that's an understatement. It was very evident with their road defeat at the hands of Notre Dame. It was a complete beatdown in every sense of the word. Let's talk quickly about Notre Dame. It starts there. How about special teams? Like, you know me, how often have I mentioned special teams on this show? I don't watch them. I don't like them. And I think it's a better game at times without them. All right, just being honest. Like, anytime, there's no disrespect to any kickers and punters out there, but I don't like the fact that we have parts of the game that are relied upon by guys who have literally never made a tackle or been tackled. That bothers me. All right, so it's no disrespect, but in this particular case, because of how impactful it was and how good it's been all season, it took me 10 weeks to get to the point where I'm going to give a little love to Notre Dame's special teams unit, in particular Brian Mason. He's a star. I mean, I don't know how else to describe it. The guy is just week in, week out, he's going to find a way to pressure the opposing punter. It's like clockwork, man. Every single week, the entire tone of the game was set. When Botello ran through there, led to the blocked punt, and Prince Coley had the scoop and score. Now, Isaiah Foskey, I might add, was about this far away from having another punt block a little bit later in the ball game. So we've looked now at this Notre Dame special teams unit. It's like they blocked, I think that's what, seven punts blocked this season? Seven. Seven in a nine-game sample size. Seven blocked punts. It's ridiculous. Completely flipped the game on its head. And from that point forward, Clemson was completely rattled. But that wasn't their only issue, man. Notre Dame's defense, relentless. Saw them get a little bit leaky against Syracuse the week before, especially against the pass. Well, DJ Uiagalelei, more on him in a minute. They got all sorts of quarterback problems right now at Clemson. Big time quarterback problems. But their inability to kind of create an edge to kind of create an opportunity in the run game, because there were times last week, Syracuse could create some seams too with Sean Tucker and Garrett Schrader. And they ran the ball okay, Syracuse did, from time to time. Now, they didn't do it consistently, but to think that it was 21-0 before Clemson ever crossed the 50-yard line, that's dominant. And that's going to require some soul-searching there for Clemson's offensive staff, including first-year offensive coordinator Brandon Streeter. Man, they got to figure out a way to get their quarterback more comfortable. And if he's not going, you got to find ways to get the running game going, because that was a no bueno performance whatsoever. Talked a little bit about the quarterback. DJ Uiagalelei, clearly the last couple of weeks, he's regressed. He's gone back to the 2021 version of himself. Everyone said, well, Cade Klubnik's the answer. Not yet. Like, you can't watch the Syracuse game and say, oh, look what Cade Klubnik did. Yeah, but I mean, right now you have two quarterbacks, you have none. Well, right now you have no quarterbacks, but you play two. And that's a problem. Like, you have to figure out a way to get one of those two guys either prepared or ready to carry the load if necessary. Now, it's not all on them, because if you look at the secondary, the coverage was excellent against the receiver core. That's been pretty disappointing at times this year. I like the tight ends, but the receivers have been really disappointing. But most disappointing for Clemson was just what's the strength of their team? Everyone knows strength of Clemson's team, right? They're a little gettable on the perimeter. We saw that against Wake Forest. They're a little gettable at safety. Fine. But you won't be able to run the ball on them, right? That's what everybody says. That's what everybody thought. Well, I think Notre Dame was pretty good running the football. Last I checked, Notre Dame had two backs go for over 100. First 250-yard rushing game since week four at North Carolina. So similar recipe to what they used earlier in the season. And if you look too at just how they were able to constantly establish the line of scrimmage, man, it was just guys getting flat back and knocking Clemson off the line of scrimmage. I mean, that offensive line did a phenomenal job from start to finish in this football game. And I also want to give credit too. I want to give credit, and I know he's come under much scrutiny. Dude, Tommy Rees, he just stuck to the plan last night, man. I mean, if there's one, and we talked to Tommy, we did the Syracuse game last week. Talked to Tommy, it's like, hey, all right, dude, how many times are you going to run duo? For those that don't know what duo is basically a power play where the running back goes right downhill in a vertical seam where you have double teams across the board. Duo, double teams. All right, that's pretty much what it is. It's power, like power, but power has a puller. Duo is power without the puller. But it's a simple, imposing, powerful play. I think last week against Syracuse, they ran it like 30 times. All right, this week, much of the same, man. Bread and butter. Like, I loved it too, because if you watch it, man, at times, yeah, there's been some cuteness. Hey, let's try an end around just because we can. Hey, let's try a play action pass. Why not? Kind of bored running it. Let's just try a play action pass. Hey, you know what? We've been gashing them up the middle. Let's see if we can't run one to the outside. Not last night. It was right downhill in an attacking and imposing way. Audric Estime was phenomenal. Logan Diggs was phenomenal. It was a great performance by everybody in that run game, because Drew Pine didn't have to do much through the air, and that's a pretty comfortable spot to be in if you're the starting quarterback. That was their 27th straight win in the regular season for Notre Dame against an ACC opponent. Everyone talking about Notre Dame joining the Big Ten, or who knows, maybe in a weird world, joining the SEC. If I'm Notre Dame, I think strongly about joining the ACC, because they are dominant. 27 in a row against ACC competition in the regular season.
Lions, Tigers, and tailgates. Oh my. The college football season is always a great time of year. Besides the jerseys, the face paint, and the foam fingers, there's the food. And nothing gets you more fired up for game day than Eckrich smoked sausage. They're naturally hardwood smoked and have the perfect blend of spices. From buffalo sausage dip, sausage chili mac and cheese, Eckrich smoked sausage is a quick way to bring flavor to all your tailgate meals. Visit Eckrich.com for easy, one-of-a-kind sausage recipes. Eckrich, you do you. Every college football season, Goodyear knows the importance of winning on the road. The road will always demand confidence, the confidence to handle whatever the journey brings and to perform under tough conditions. And just like the players and the fans of college football, Goodyear is ready. Are you ready for the road? Visit Goodyear.com to find the right Goodyear tires for whatever road you're on this season. Goodyear, more driven.
All right, some other notable performances, some good, some bad. Let's start with Ohio State. My goodness, man, not a good performance. It's really not pretty. Here's the issue. All right, if you're Ohio State, you can recruit anybody in the country, right? You're one of the best, most, you know, biggest football programs. Everybody and their brother from all across the country flocks to Ohio State. Not that they finish like number one in the recruiting classes every year or anything, no, but they're always in the mix. Why is it that Ohio State would go in the direction of trying to run an offense that is weather dependent? Explain to me that. Someone's going to need to explain to me that, because I look at this offense, and if you take away their passing attack, they become very human very quickly. Yes, I know there were 50 mile an hour wind gusts. I know it was awful weather conditions to throw the football. Well, you're Ohio State. How come you can't run the football? Like, someone's going to have to explain that to me. Like, I look at their offensive line. They all look like Greek gods, right? Like, big, physical, 6 foot six, 6 foot seven, 295 pounds, 315 pounds. I don't know. I don't know what they weigh. But I tell you what they look like. They were carved out of absolute marble and put in Ohio State uniform, and they're going to sit up there on the line of scrimmage, and yet they get pushed around. How is that possible? I don't understand that. And I think part of it is just kind of their philosophy. Like, they empower the passing game so significantly. I don't know if they don't rep the run game enough, but all I know is that Mayan Williams, yeah, he averaged 4.5 yards a carry against the 105th ranked defense in the country against the run. How is that possible? I mean, Northwestern, yes, traditionally very good against the run. Not as much this year. 105th coming into this game. And now you're going to look at the stats, you know, all together. You're going to say, well, 35 carries for 207 and three touchdowns as a team. Yeah, that's 6 yards a carry on paper. But you look at the stat sheet, yeah, feels good. But you look at the game tape, you're like, ah. You know, C.J. Stroud had the 44-yard run. Maya Williams had that 27-yard run. You take away those two runs by itself, and now you're down to 4 yards a carry. And it just didn't feel like there was any consistency there, man. On the bright side, you know, you look at three of the top six teams lost, you won. So it doesn't, you know, they don't necessarily need style points, but if I'm Ryan Day and if I'm Ohio State, look, C.J. Stroud's phenomenal. The wide receivers are phenomenal. It's going to be a destination for those guys forever. But man, they got to figure out more creative ways to be
more physical. You have more talent than the competition almost every single week. Well, why is it that you don't play more physical? And this is not a one-year thing, I might add. This goes back to last year too, because I don't know if the offensive line is super physical. I just don't see it. I really don't. I see guys that look like statues that are amazing, Greek gods, but they don't push anybody around. It's a little frustrating. I got to be honest. But hey, win is a win. Don't worry about it. But if you play the way, you better hope that when Michigan comes to town in a couple weeks, weather's perfect. 70 and sunny. Because if it's 70 and sunny, you'll boat race everybody. But if there's rain, wind, sideways sleet, monsoon, God knows what, that offense, it's not exactly the high-octane machine that they've been at times when it's under perfect conditions. If I'm them, I would petition the city of Columbus right now. How much money would it cost to put a dome over the horseshoe? All right, let's make it perfect. Let's make it ideal weather. Because if it is, we'll smoke everybody. Man, I don't know. I think that they need to really, they might win the national championship this year. They ultimately might. Because you think about it, you get in the playoff, where you're playing. Well, you're either playing in a dome or in perfect weather. And then the national championship's in LA. Perfect weather. Dome. Not technically a dome, but covered. So they might ultimately win the national championship. Man, if I'm Ohio State, I'm taking a real good look in the mirror with my recruiting philosophy and how I'm putting practice together. And I want my group to be more physical in the years to come. I'm just not seeing that from them right now when they should be. They certainly look like they can be. That's for sure. And other teams, it's not crazy physical, but man, can they light up the scoreboard? That's the TCU Horned Frogs. They're a lot like Ohio State, frankly. They just got great track meet speed. They can flat out go. Now, it wasn't great. I mean, it wasn't until the fourth quarter until TCU got their first offensive touchdown of the game. And the Horned Frogs run together 10 plays, 81-yard scoring drive. But it really wasn't just the offense. They were kind of aided there by that first touchdown. That's some penalties. I mean, their 28 yards of penalties on that drive alone led to a few first downs. And ultimately, the Horned Frogs were able to punch it in. Now, they have faced – I've never seen a team that has faced more backup quarterbacks. If you look at TCU, they've played against Jason Bean at Kansas. They've played against Davis Bevel at Oklahoma. They've played against this week, they played against Tyler Shuck when Baron Morton went down. I mean, like, they have had a run in which they faced backup quarterback after backup quarterback after backup quarterback. Now, it's not ideal to kind of, against Kansas State, obviously, they lost not one, but two quarterbacks, Will Howard and Adrian Martinez. So they've been on a run of pretty good luck, too. I mean, Baron Morton started the game, kind of limped off the field there in the first half. In came Shuck. Shuck went 9 of 22, threw an interception. But you got to still give credit to TCU, man. You can see, get this team down, they're never really out of it. I mean, they just aren't. You look at it another time again this year, that's the fourth time this season in which they've come back from a second half deficit. They ended up ultimately not just win, but they covered there. I mean, the line was 9.5. They won by 10. The Horned Frogs are 4-0 this season when trailing in the second half. That's the best record in the FBS. Of course, they trailed 17-13 starting the fourth quarter. Also want to give a shout out to Kendry Miller, man. The first TCU player to reach 1,000 rushing yards in the team's first 9 games of the season since LaDainian Tomlinson. So that was back in 2000. You join a list with LaDainian Tomlinson, it's a short list. You're doing right. You're doing all right. All right, quickly, Oregon and Bo Nix continue to ride. Not surprised. Dominant performance. We'll see if they carry it over. Of course, still plenty of landmines on the schedule. But man, you look at it, things are looking pretty good for the Oregon Ducks, especially with what went down there in the top 6. Clemson losing is the greatest thing in the world for the Pac-12. Because Oregon, USC, and UCLA. Not saying that they're better than Clemson. Not saying I'd pick them to beat Clemson. I don't. I think that those teams have a lot of issues. SC, especially on the defense side of the football. There's a lot of things that I don't like about what I've seen at times from those groups. But ultimately, man, Oregon, I think, is the class of the Pac-12. SC's defense leaves me just scratching my head way too often to feel great about them. But now that Clemson's lost, Pac-12 is back in it. If TCU loses this week to Texas, hey, the Pac-12 is even more in it. And guess what? Now you have a potential for Tennessee to sneak back into the mix, or maybe even a 2-loss LSU that wins the SEC championship. They might be in the mix. So a lot of things still to consider here when evaluating the playoff picture. And then finally, Texas, I referenced them a second ago. What a great win for Steve Sarkisian to go on the road against a Kansas State team that had just throttled Oklahoma State the week before, and they get a nice win. It was scary there for a minute. Big lead, of course, in the first half. It felt like, oh boy, here we go again. Kansas State makes it interesting. And then ultimately, they hang on and pull away there at the very end. So great win for Texas, setting up what should be a phenomenal game next week when they welcome the undefeated Horned Frogs into DKR for what should be one of the best games of the college football season. All right, time to trot out a new segment here. We're going to hit a couple teams, a couple games, a couple matchups that might have surprised you. Maybe you were all over them. I don't know where you were, but either way, a couple things that we're going to hit. We're going to call it What Happened To. So, Coops, take it away from the South Bend Airport. What airport are you at?
I'm at the South Bend Airport. My first one is, what happened to my voice, McElroy?
I think you know what happened to your voice, but we won't talk about it. This is a family platform. I think you're screaming at the top of your lungs and probably crowd surfing there on the field. So hopefully you visited the grotto this morning before you headed to the plane, but I would imagine that there was some indulgence on your part throughout the course of the weekend.
It was a very, very fun weekend and, you know, just capped off with a great win. All right, moving on, though, to the segment at hand here. What happened to Illinois, ranked in the top 25 for the first time since 2011, and they lose at home to Michigan State?
It's pretty eye-opening right now. And the fact that Illinois, they have two losses this season. One to arguably, if not the worst team in the Big Ten, but one of in Indiana. And now you lose to Michigan State. The fact that you lose at home is even more alarming. Those two teams, however, Indiana and Michigan State, a combined record of 7-11. All right. Pretty wild. I don't know how that happens. And both those teams, both Michigan State and Indiana, scored 23 points in the process. That's a season high as far as points allowed for Illinois. Still a good football team. But now you look at the Big Ten West, y'all. Like, look at the Big Ten West. There are about five teams within striking distance with three losses that could come out of the Big Ten West and ultimately play in the Big Ten championship game. If there's ever been a season to just totally point to, here's why we don't do divisions. Like, this is it. Like, the Big Ten West is giving me serious ACC Coastal vibes. Like, ACC Coastal, usually they're the one in this situation where, like, the winner of the Coastal's 8-4. You know, the West, I think Illinois is still the class and they still have a game lead against everybody. But remember, they still have to play Michigan. So guess what? Because of the upset this past weekend, you now have a great scenario for Minnesota. You have a great scenario for Iowa, who's all of a sudden come alive the last couple weeks. I'm not sure how, but they've come alive the last couple weeks. I mean, you look at Purdue is still somewhat in the mix. I mean, it's wild when you take into account just how wide open this race becomes, especially if Michigan holds serve and takes care of business against the Illini, who currently sit at the top of the table. So the big reason why they lost this past weekend, 1-6 on fourth down. I mean, that's just not going to happen. They came into the game 10 of 16, and including the performance, if you look at how they played against Minnesota on fourth down specifically, I mean, I think they were 4-for-4 on fourth down that day. Every single one of those four conversions led to points and led ultimately to a touchdown. And obviously, anytime you score against Minnesota, you keep the football because it's not an easy thing to do. So it was really fourth down conversions and fourth down stops for Michigan State that was the ultimate disruptor in this one. But a bad loss for Illinois and a bad loss for Brett Bielema.
All right, moving on. What happened to Miami? Lose 45-3 against Florida State at home. They've now lost four consecutive home games.
Yeah, Miami's a mash unit right now, man. I mean, I don't really know how else to it's not really a spin. But man, this team is not deep enough or talented enough to play when they're at less than 100%. I mean, Tyler Van Dyke was lost in the first half of that football game. He's had that hurt throwing shoulder. He threw into the dirt just trying to throw it away. And he grabbed his shoulder, had to leave the game, came back into the game, tried to make a throw a little bit later, landed on it a little bit. He just wasn't anywhere near 100%. They lose Jalen Rivers, their left guard and best offensive lineman, in the process of that game as well. Xavier Restrepo has missed time. They have had, gosh, a ton of guys that have missed time with injury. Henry Parrish has missed time. He's at running back. Restrepo's a wide receiver. So if you look at him, and they've been a mash unit for the most part from start to finish. I mean, they have had so many guys that have been in and out of the lineup. They were at less than 100% going into the game, and they left the game even less than being less than 100%. Mesidor's been in and out of the lineup. Kinchins has had some injury stuff as well. So I think part of it, look, anytime you are adjusting from one coach to the next, there's going to be a bit of a culture adjustment. All right. Nick Saban, let's not forget, the greatest of all time, went 6-6 in his debut as the Alabama head coach in the regular season back in 2007. That 6-6 team that I was on lost to Louisiana Monroe. So they've already made their loss to Middle Tennessee, right? So Miami is very human, but you can expect they'll be huge in the transfer portal and will try to improve that roster immediately because they need to. Not just in one spot, not just in two spots, but in about 10 spots. They need to be deeper. They need to be more talented. And I think the excitement that surrounded the program coming into the season was totally off the mark.
All right, and last one here. What happened to Oklahoma State? A little over 2.5 weeks ago, they were a top 10 team. In the last 2 weeks, they've lost two games by a total score of 85-16.
Well, I think they're a little bit like Miami in the sense that they're just completely beat up. I mean, this team has had to endure significant injuries. I mean, I just can't believe how many injuries Oklahoma State's had to deal with, and it's not a crazy deep roster. I mean, you take away their quarterback, then you're really looking at some issues. But here's the guys that were out, all right? These are the guys. This is a whole list of guys that were out in the game this past weekend against Kansas. And more on Kansas in a minute, we need to give some credit to them, okay, too? So we're going to talk about the Jayhawks. Don't worry. I know all you Jayhawks fans. Like, you've been supportive of the show because we've been supportive of you. Sorry, it's not that hard to be supportive of y'all. Y'all have done a great job. But here are the team guys that you were out. Spencer Sanders, all right, good luck. You lose your starting quarterback. He's a really good player. It's going to be difficult to overcome. Jaden Bray at wide receiver. Braden Johnson at wide receiver. Blaine Green at tight end. Hunter Woodard at offensive line. Thomas Harper at safety. You're a punter. That's how bad it is. Your punter's hurt. All right, so not good, right? It's really, really not been good for Oklahoma State. They've just had one of those unfortunate years where, especially in this time of the year, depth is of the utmost importance. They just haven't had guys been able to kind of replicate the success of the guy that was starting in front of them. So I think a lot like Miami in a sense, not quite to the same extent of disappointing, but a lot to Miami in the sense of, man, it's just too hard to replace those guys without any drop-off whatsoever when you're at a place like Oklahoma State, because there's been a pretty significant drop-off at several different positions.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Starting your own small business can be a total roller coaster. Between all those bumpy twists and turns comes the actual business side of your business, which can really throw you for a loop. Luckily, with QuickBooks, you can manage your business with confidence from the start. So no matter how bumpy the ride gets, you can always stay on track. New business? No problem. Success starts with Intuit QuickBooks. Learn more at QuickBooks.com. All right, like we try to do every single Monday, we either have someone on, but we want to give some shout outs if we can, like always, right? Why wouldn't we give some shout outs? To give a little shout out to the offenses. Poo-poo the defenses, all right? Worst defensive performances I think I've ever seen. And Dana Holgorsen hung his head in defeat and saying, yeah, there was no way we were going to stop them. But SMU and Houston played the highest scoring game in regulation in FBS history. SMU won 77-63. There were 16 combined passing touchdowns in the effort. Of course, 140 combined points scored. That is a ridiculous number. Do you realize that Tanner Mordecai, the quarterback for SMU, actually had less incompletions than touchdowns accounted for? He had 9 touchdown passes. He had 9 incompletions, but he also ran for a touchdown, so he accounted for 10 touchdowns against 9 incompletions. That is absurd. 63 points is what Houston scored. It's the most in a regulation loss in FBS history. So SMU Houston, while providing us fireworks, can we please tighten the screws on defense? Please, just a little bit. And then finally to Kansas, how do we not give you a shout out? You are bowl eligible. You had gone 3-9 or worse in the previous 12 seasons, but they got the win against Oklahoma State. Jason Bean went in, started his third straight game for Kansas, didn't disappoint. He's 18 of 23 for 203 and a couple scores, and he was awesome with his legs as well, added nearly 100 yards on the ground, including a 73-yard touchdown run. So they also forced 4 turnovers on the defensive side. So shout out to Mark DeLeon, my boy, and all the great guys down there working on Kansas's defensive staff. I know the offense is always going to get the credit, but the defense, they've improved at least a little bit the last few weeks as well. You look at that Kansas team, man, so proud of them. First bowl game since 2008. So very, very exciting to see that they'll be punching their ticket to the postseason for the first time in quite a while. All right, final thought, like we do every single Monday. Really, we try to have a final thought every day, but sometimes we don't have them. All right, but we won't mention on days we don't have them. So we have one today. This will be the first playoff without Alabama and Clemson. Think about that. The first one without Alabama and Clemson. Clemson has gone to the playoff, goodness gracious, how many consecutive years it felt like? And then Alabama, of course, had made the playoff every single year from 2014 to 2019. They missed the playoff that year, and they, of course, went in 20 and 21. So it'd be the second time that Alabama's on the outside looking in when it comes to the college football playoff. Is there still a way for them to backdoor their way in? Sure, but I think it would basically take the world collapsing. It would take LSU losing a couple games, and that doesn't feel likely, at least not at the moment, given how LSU's playing. They go to Arkansas this week, and then they have Texas A&M, who's lost 5 straight there in the regular season finale. So LSU, for all intents and purposes, assuming they're victorious next week on the road at Arkansas, they'll be in a great spot to represent the SEC West in Brian Kelly's first year. But this will be the first time that we've seen a college football playoff without Clemson and Alabama. It's pretty wild because for the first time ever, and maybe I'm just listening to it because I live down here in the South, I've never heard Bama fans, I've never heard Clemson fans clamoring for a 12-team playoff, ever. I've never heard them. They say it's weakening the regular season. It's going to be terrible for the regular season. Games won't matter. Yeah, well, now you're starting to see why a 12-team playoff might actually be really beneficial for college football. Because while, yes, in normal years, Bama losing to LSU wouldn't necessarily matter because both teams might very well make the playoff. Now it's even more likely that Bama could potentially be on the outside. Not saying they'll ever be ranked outside the top 12, but you take into account, depending on how many automatic qualifiers there are from bowl from teams that win their conference championship. I think there's a lot of things to consider. And then really Clemson, man, yeah, they still might very well win the ACC. But man, that's an unimpressive group right now. I mean, just an unimpressive group. And in a 12-team playoff, them being in the playoff, yeah, I mean, I don't think they'd last long, to be honest with you. But ultimately, man, to see two teams that have always been very, very strongly in favor of the four-team format because they've been so good in the four-team format, to now see them do an about-face and talking about how expansion is actually best for the sport, it just had me chuckling just a little bit. Thank you so much for being with us. Just a phenomenal day of college football on Saturday. Just amazing from start to finish. Outcomes, environments, field stormings. The fact that the World Series was completely on the back burner for me tells you all you need to know about just how great this weekend was for college football. So it was tremendous, and I hope you guys enjoyed it as much as we did. For all of us here at Always College Football, for Jack Foster, for Jack Schrail, for Mark Kubiak, who can barely even survive this interview, he's so hungover, I'm Greg McElroy. We so appreciate you being with us. Come back, be with us again tomorrow. We're going to talk a little bit about the rankings, what the rankings should look like, what the rankings will look like, and a couple big picture topics that you won't want to miss. So like, rate, and subscribe. It helps us out. It helps the show out. Hit that little thumbs up button at the bottom of the YouTube page. You can't miss it. If you're here with us via the podcast, whether it's Spotify or Apple Podcast, hit the subscribe button. Give us a 5-star rating. We really appreciate that as well. And the biggest thing too, tell your friends, tell them that we're here every single day talking about college football, trying to hit all different parts of college football. Like we'll talk about Tulane this week. Tulane, by the way, they should be hosting College Game Day. I thought that was a missed opportunity. I would have loved to have seen College Game Day there in New Orleans for not, you know, the Sugar Bowl, but I would love to have seen them in New Orleans for a Tulane game. They host UCF next week, but it just wasn't meant to be. I suppose Game Day will be heading to Austin for TCU, Texas. So either way, it would be awesome to see that. But hopefully Tulane keeps winning. Maybe they'll host at some point here in the very near future. We'll talk about everybody. We're going to hit a lot of games, a lot of matchups, and a lot of big picture storylines here in the next few days. So lock in right here with us. We appreciate you. For all of us here at Always College Football, I'm Greg McElroy. Hope you have a wonderful day. And remember, it's always college football. Hey guys, it's Greg McElroy. Thanks for watching Always College Football. Make sure you like, rate, and subscribe to ESPN's YouTube channel and wherever you listen to your podcasts.